Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Ron Reardon with my co-host Bill McHenry. Bill, how are you today?
Super, Ron. Great day here. I'm not sitting in rain like I was yesterday.
That's great. Well, Bill, on Launch, we focus on the launching of a business, the planning that precedes a launch, the launch itself, the missteps and successes of the launch so that entrepreneurs can successfully navigate their launch. This morning, we're going to be featuring Rebecca Preen of Council to Creativity. But before we get started, Bill, could you thank today's sponsor?
Of course, Ron. Today, our sponsor is Patents & More. Patents & More, protecting your innovation and connecting you to the resources you need for success.
Okay, well, Rebecca Preen is an attorney and an artist, which is an unusual combination, and she's going to talk to us today about how she helps creative entrepreneurs use the law to harness and leverage their creativity to grow their business and how she's doing that on her own. So please welcome your creativity lawyer, Rebecca Preen.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Okay. Well, it's kind of unusual to have an attorney that is an artist. What a unique combination that is.
So, thank you. Yeah, I've heard that before. That's the most common comment I seem to get back is, whoa, that's really interesting. Two very different ways for your brain to work.
Okay. So, Rebecca.
Well, tell us, sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, tell us, Rebecca, what does it mean to grow a business on your creative genius, and how do you do that with your clients?
Sure. You know, most of my clients or most of the people I know of who are creative entrepreneurs, including myself, are really invested in creating a life and a livelihood kind of around their passion and around their creativity. And I'm really invested in making that happen for all of us, kind of making, quote, real businesses out of our creative work. And so what I do to work with people is come up with a plan that uses what's available to them through the law to make their creativity, the products of their creativity, property, and to use those in terms of increase streams of revenue or partnerships with people. So what does that mean in terms of what I do with the law? Well, I really put a foundation underneath them so that they feel confident that their creative assets are protected and that they can kind of put themselves out there in a bolder way. So one of the things I do, although it's a small part of what I do, is the business formation part to make their businesses a separate legal entity from them so that they can get some tax advantages, and really so they can limit their liability, so their personal liability in terms of the risks they take for their business. And then the main chunk of what I do is work with them on trademarking and copywriting so that they can trademark their name and their logo and really start to build a brand around their business and what they do, and then copyright so that their creative content is protected and recognized as an asset, which then they can leverage through licensing. I do a lot of contracting. I work with people on their client agreements. I work with them on licensing agreements and on joint ventures. And that's kind of it.
Well, Rebecca, I see from your bio that you work with your clients by playing with language and drawing concepts. I mean, is that stick figures and Pig Latin, or what is that?
It is a little bit like stick figures, definitely more like stick figures than my own art is. I don't paint them, you know, an oil painting like I do on my own time. But I guess what I mean by playing with language is that law has its own language, and the legal profession has its own language, and we are so mired in it as lawyers, and we've been speaking it for so long, and we speak it to each other, and most of us who work with corporate clients or interact with the courts, we speak the same language as them, and we speak it all the time. It's a professional language. Well, you know what, entrepreneurs don't always speak that language. And certainly when entrepreneurs who are, let's say, more right brain oriented, less linear, they don't have any familiarity with this language. So I really try and break the concept down and use language that's accessible to people, that's just kind of straight shot here. This is what it looks like on the ground. I tell stories. I give different scenarios. I give examples. The other thing I do is that I use metaphor to try and take the, I want to say the sting. I don't know that it's really a sting, but to take the edge off or the foreignness out of doing your legal work. A lot of people don't want, that I work with, don't want to approach it because it seems very intimidating. And so business owners won't take a look or won't engage a lawyer or don't want to talk to the lawyer until there's a problem. And I'm not saying creative entrepreneurs are the only ones who do this. I'm just saying that part of it is the language and culture barrier that they perceive, and that perhaps, you know, in many ways actually is real based upon the professions we've chosen and kind of how we've been trained and just our natural orientation. So I do that. I mean, one of the metaphors I love to try and instill in people an understanding that that the law just isn't something, it's just not an insurance policy. It's not, you know, something, a lawyer isn't someone you, business lawyer at least, isn't somebody that you talk to, you know, only when you have an emergency situation, that there are, you know, planning elements around it and that you can, you know, use it as part of your business strategy is, I'm also a yoga teacher. I don't know if I put that on the information form, but I love using yoga as a metaphor for law. And the reason I do that, they seem pretty disparate, but the reason I do that is because in yoga we have practices, and we do these practices to kind of discipline ourselves and to give ourselves a structure and to grow, right, and to change in our own lives. And so I've thought of the legal services or legal tools for businesses as practices, and sort of like, what if we made a practice of creating a separate space for our business and making it its own entity instead of attached to us legally as individuals? What if we made a practice of really identifying what our creative assets are and how we can protect them, how we can, you know, really use the legal tools to identify their value and then leverage that value to grow our business. And then the third one is, how can we practice, make a practice out of creating clarity and comfort and boundaries in our relationships? And that would be the contracting end of it. So that's the kind of thing that I do in terms of the language. It's really a lot around metaphor. I'm very conversational and very casual, both when I speak to my clients and when I write in my blog or give free talks or whatnot. You know, I'm told a lot of times, oh, you don't seem like a lawyer, or you don't look like a lawyer, or you don't talk like a lawyer. And I always think that's a little odd when I hear that. But it makes me believe, you know what, I'm like, I feel accessible to people. They feel that I'm accessible. And then to answer the second part of your question about the pictures, I usually draw some kind of like flow chart or some kind of mind map. It's usually just, you know, a sheet of paper with, I use markers, usually color code things because, at least I associate meaning with color, so if things are different, I understand that there are differentiations. So I do those types of things. So there's some kind of spatial and color element to the connection between the different concepts, or the connection between the steps we're going to go through in order to put this tool in order, because a lot of lot of creative entrepreneurs are more visual or spatial than they are verbal or, you know, learned by reading. So it's just another tool. It's a tool I haven't, you know, I haven't seen before in terms of lawyers using, really. I know there's a couple lawyers I know who use whiteboards. But it's getting good response, and I would like to use it more. I would definitely like to use the visual element more. I feel that sometimes when I actually get into working with my clients, if they're not right there in front of me all the time, the visual element can go out the window, which kind of leads to me having to do a little bit more explaining and leads them to have a little bit more confusion. So I think it's a really good tool.
Well, you know,
it's really interesting, Rebecca, because as a business owner and an entrepreneur myself, in meeting with attorneys, I always think, gosh, you know, if they would just bring their language down to my level, it would sure be a lot easier to understand.
Yeah, if they would just explain it to me. And, you know, I was asked once, when I first started my practice, I did an interview like this with a business coach who had a podcast series. And one of the things she said to me was, why do you think that the law is so intimidating for us when we start businesses? And I said, I think there's a language barrier and there's a cultural difference, and that we as lawyers expect our clients to come live in our world and play in our playground, so to speak. And the fact is that if we just make that switch and go play in theirs,
if we learn the language
of our clients, they understand. I mean, my clients, for the most part, there are some things that some find more difficult to concepts they find more difficult to wrap their head around than others, and it's different for each client. But, you know, for the most part, you explain it to them and you put it in a real-world context, how it really affects their business, and say, look, this is what will happen if X. This is what will happen if Y. Say, and you give them a scenario. You know, people understand the concepts. This is not, I don't know, I even hate to say rocket science because that's so cliche, but you know, it's not that difficult. It is a bit of an enigma, and it is a special, you know, it's a special language. That's part of the training that we get as attorneys, is to understand not only the concepts, but the language that's used to explain the concepts.
We had a guest on recently that said, there's an inventor planet and there's a business planet, and what we should have a show on sometime, Ron, is a show on the business planet and all the different planets, like you attorneys.
That's true.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's really funny. Sometimes I do feel like I'm someone who lives between the two planets. And that's really how I came to the idea, or came to wanting to start my practice, was that I was never really satisfied or really happy being an attorney. And I don't know, and there were just some business elements missing from being an artist. And, you know, frankly, I went to all this school to be an attorney, and now I needed to pay off that school. And I thought, oh, my God, how am I going to do this? And really kind of feel satisfied and happy and feeling like I'm using, you know, kind of using my whole self in order to do it. And it just kind of went back to people saying to me over and over and over again, oh, that's so interesting. Your brain works in such different ways. And I thought, well, okay, instead of thinking that it's like this bane of my existence, that I can't kind of find the right fit, that it's one or the other, instead of thinking of them as polar opposites kind of existing within, you know, kind of the reality of my life.
So you really feel you chose a business that was really your natural area of strength then, being an attorney?
I do. I think that, you know, it's kind of one of those stories where you think you have a challenge, and the challenge actually ends up to be your gift.
Yeah, I think you're uniquely...
Where it's like, oh, that's what I do really well.
Yeah, you're uniquely...
I, like, run between these two worlds. I call myself a translator on my website. I've said that I run interference.
Yeah, you're uniquely positioned because of the talents that you've got. You know, the same is true.
Yeah, I think it's, and so I'm just elated that's what's happened. I just feel, you know, I'm lit up by this.
Yeah. Well, you know, in patent law, we have hard requirements for what has to be in patents. Like, it has to have the best mode has to be in the patent. And you know, you say best mode to an inventor, they're like, is that like Apple a la mode or what? You know, and they're like, no, it's best version. Okay. And it also has to be.
It's like when you file a trademark, they want a specimen.
Right.
That word always like throws people off. I've had people call me and say, okay, I tried to file this by myself and I started crying when I read the website because I don't understand anything on it.
I know.
Like, it's kind of unnecessary for them to call it a specimen.
Right.
But they do.
Well, you know,
Rebecca, I'm curious. What do you think a certain personality trait an entrepreneur needs to have?
I think it's actually my sense is that it's a cluster of personality traits. One is sort of I think vision and innovation. It's definitely one of them. I think tenacity, you know, or persistence is another one, a big one. And I guess that ability to kind of, and when we talk about moving between two worlds, you know, just thinking about the way we all kind of approach the world or the way we process information. You know, there's people who process information kind of in the big picture sense. There's people who process information in the details. I think that's something that kind of like differentiates right brain and left brain people a lot of times. The lawyers are really, they're really detail oriented, and a lot of the creative folks I work with, they're not. I mean, they'll get the details done, but they're broad strokes kind of more visionary people. And I really think that one of the commonalities that I've seen in meeting the entrepreneurs I've met kind of in my short journey of doing this myself is that there's this modulation, you know, there's this dance we do between, okay, well, what's the big vision for our business? And then, okay, well, what are the details to get there? And kind of constantly being able to work with both almost simultaneously or at least alternatingly. And so I've observed that. I would say those are kind of the big ones that I'm thinking of right now. The other one for me has been being able to identify that I need help and who might be able to give it to me.
Okay.
Because I think one of the mistakes I tend to make is that I can do everything myself, and there's just no way.
Yeah, that won't work. Well, and Rebecca, in the building of your company, what scared you the most, and how did you overcome that fear, and have those fears proved founded or unfounded?
I think, you know, two things, two fears. One was starving to death, I think. I mean, just a real... I know it's totally irrational, but on the one hand, it's like the most basic fear, you know? We're all afraid of not having shelter and not having food, and I actually started my business out of unemployment. So there definitely was the real fear of, okay, there's very, very limited resources to go around here, and how am I going to cobble this together, and that was a big one. And I don't know if I don't know that I'm like past the point of worrying about the scarcity of the continual flow of income. Although I'm getting to the point where I kind of trust that if I keep doing the things that I'm doing, that the work will be there for me, and I'll do it. But that was a big one, and you know, how did I overcome it? I think at some point it was just a leap of faith. I spent some time on, you know, making a plan. I spent some time with a part-time job to try and do some, you know, kind of concrete things to alleviate that fear. And then when it became clear that the time I was spending on the part-time job was I really started having a sense that it was all too much for me, and it was getting in the way of my building the business, and it was make or break time. Once it came to that, it was really a leap of faith. It was just, okay, I need to do this. I'm going to do whatever it takes to do this. And And I did, and I started seeing results. And so so it helps when you start seeing, it helps when you start seeing results, and I think that's where the tenacity comes in when you're an entrepreneur and you're not seeing results yet.
As you started your business, Rebecca, were you more systematic in your approach, or were you more seat of the pants?
A little of both. I tend to be a pretty seat of the pants kind of person, but I do. I do think that it takes some training. I had a plan in terms of how I was going to position myself. Like a kind of, it's interesting because people do a lot of work on their branding and their positioning and what's their unique selling proposition. And I think I've been very lucky in the sense that like I didn't come to my business until I found my my branding. Like it was so. I had a plan. I kind of had a plan about that and got some resource. But literally, it was just all right. It's I planned on doing this maybe two or three years in the future after I'd been at a firm for a few more years and actually had made a plan to do it. And I was laid off, in Atlanta with so many other attorneys who were laid off last spring. And I just thought, all right, well, it's now or never. What do I need to do to make this happen? And I just started going, how do I build a website? How do I do this? How do I do that? And so then once I had kind of a web presence and I started to talk to people and figure out where I could go to meet people who might need my services and who would be a good fit. And I just kind of kept taking notes and talking to people. So I don't know that it was like so much fly by the seat of my pants as maybe it was organic as opposed to plan. I mean, I definitely always have notes and a strategic plan, but it's evolving. When I set out at the beginning of this year to do a whole year's strategic plan, I honestly couldn't see that far ahead. I only started my business in October of last year. So I really didn't know what was happening. I would say really that it's great to have a plan. And it's kind of like organization. You have as much of a plan as you need to kind of make yourself comfortable. And to be flexible in it. But I would also say that the times that I have planned or that I've set, it's not so much planning for me as it is setting goals. And when I do set down those goals and like write down some of the actual like actions I'm going to take or how I could meet that goal, things start coming together, I think, because I start taking actions in the right direction.
Well,
I definitely have that fly by the seat of my pants. Like, if I change my mind about something, I'm like, oh, I have to do this. I need to, I need to throw this course, or I need to write this blog post, or I need to send this email out to my list about all this exciting information. I definitely want to do it immediately. I think I drive my virtual assistant crazy because of that. So I'm like, oh, how fast can we do this? I was interviewed for a book that a woman here in Atlanta is writing on following your true voice, and I forget what she had asked me, but she had asked me something about, we were talking about forms of intelligence, and I think she was asking me kind of in talking about my strengths and my weaknesses, like where I felt like I had a really, what areas of identified intelligence that I think I was really strong in, and what were the ones that, I hope no one ever asked me to use. And one of the things she raised was idea, like ideation, idea creation. And I'm one of those people who has a constant stream of ideas. And I think where I go wrong in those is wanting to execute them immediately. So in that kind of way, I'm definitely a fly by the seat of my pants.
Okay, well, Rebecca, you mentioned your virtual assistant. How did you engage others to join you on your team?
Oh, it's, I've been really lucky in that. It's been a real process of it's really been an attraction kind of process. Like, I don't even want to say meeting the right people at the right time, because that's not necessarily true, but I think, I don't know if it's like the nature of what I do, that people aren't expecting sort of, they aren't expecting me as an attorney, or they're not expecting an attorney to specialize in working with creative folks. But a lot of attention has kind of come my way, I think, because of the combination of it. And so, you know, I've just in networking, or I've been interviewed, you know, by people, and then people kind of come out of the woodwork to come tell me what they're about and their story, and so it's just kind of worked that way. Either I've reached out to them because I felt like there was a connection in our story, or in what we're doing, or we seem to be kind of have the same orientation in terms of how we do business or what we're interested in, or a compatible, or there could be a sense, you just sense there's a synergy there. But as I say, like, I've been very surprised and just delighted at how many people have come out and approached me. I mean, my assistant, she approached me. Like, I was saying, oh, I need to get an assistant, and apparently she was saying, oh, this is really cool what she's doing. I want to know this woman. And so that kind of came together that way. And my paralegal I had actually known before, and she was asking me how things were going, and then she said to me that she was looking for some additional work, and so that came together that way. And otherwise, it's just been networking. I think when you really enjoy what you're doing and you're really enthusiastic about it, and you're seeing. Sorry, dog. When you're seeing results in your clients, it's really easy to be really enthusiastic and really confident about the value that you're providing to people. And I think other people see that, and they want to join in, you know, in the energy of that. And
you know, Rebecca, it's fascinating to hear you say that, because I've found that as I've grown my business in the whole networking aspect of it. You know, I remember the day I met Ron. It was in Miami at the United Inventors Board or United Inventors Association board meeting in January. And, you know, 7 months later, here we are, partners on this Launch Hour show. And it's fascinating to me with this networking. And it made me think, as listening to you, is what are the three essential legal steps that a new creative business person should really take?
Yeah, you know, there's really, it's interesting because people think it's very complicated, and, you know, depending on the context of your business, some of the structures might be more complicated than others, but, you know, if you really just think about these three basic tools is really what I talk to people about. The first is your business structure. So you want a container for your business. You want some kind of entity, right, to hold everything that you're going to do. So that would be your LLC or your corporation or your partnership, and there are various reasons that you would choose any one of those.
Sure.
You know, and it varies. It's pretty personal, but yeah, it's a personal business choice as to what the right one might be for you. But to actually sit down and think about that and say, oh, okay, I don't have to just muddle through if that's what I'm doing with my sole proprietor, or do it because I don't know what else to do. And the second piece is the intellectual property piece. You know, taking the step to claim your brand. Several of my clients have said, oh, I felt like I was like really staking my claim in the ground. Like, oh my gosh, this is this real thing, and I don't have to worry about changing my name ever. I don't have to worry about kind of, you know, it not being available at some point. So I would say that's the second point, is to take a look at the intellectual or the creative capital that you have and that you're intending to build, and how you can get some initial kind of recognition and protection for that. And then you can use that, or you use both of those tools, actually, to then enter into the third thing I recommend, which is contracts, which is really kind of where the heart of business gets a little meaty, right? Because that's how we interact with other people. It's how we interact with our set boundaries, or make deals with our clients, or come to the terms of a partnership. And so that's the third thing, is the contract. And I find that there's most resistance, and yet the most need is for the contracts.
Good point.
So that's what I would recommend.
Okay. Well, Rebecca, you're a real breath of fresh air in the legal profession. How can our listeners get in touch with you and learn more about you and your legal services?
Well, thank you, Ron, for saying that. It's a very nice compliment. It's pretty easy to get in touch with me. I have a website. It is counsel2creativity.com. There are dashes between each of the words, hyphens rather. You could also contact me via email. You can email my office at info@counsel2creativity.com, or you can give me a call at 404-229-3856.
Okay. Well, thanks for being on our show today, Rebecca. Our listeners have gotten some really great nuggets and learnings that they can use in their launch and their journey. Thanks again.
Great. Thanks so much for having me, Ron and Bill.
Okay. Another great show, Bill.
Gosh, Ron, it really was very interesting. Fascinating. I also want to give a special thanks today to our sponsor, Patents and More, your trusted guide to the innovation jungle.
And tune in each week at this same time to listen live, or go to our blog at thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com to listen at your convenience. This is Ron Reardon and Bill McHenry signing off another great session of The Launch Hour.